Well, we want to kick off this new year by helping, hopefully helping you discover a better tomorrow. So this is the time of year when people are oftentimes make what we call New Year's resolutions, right? New Year's resolutions. Those are things that some people make, like me and you. Sometimes in the past, perhaps you've done it this year, perhaps you've done it before. And then sometimes, okay, much of the time, those resolutions become like forgotten and failed at by the time the month is even partially over, right? Definitely by the end of January. And so sometimes we stop making them altogether because what's the point? And in fact, sometimes we joke about them because we think they're pointless. So whether you've made them or whether you are begrudging, you know, how last year's went, or the start of COVID resolutions, how we're going to do all these things during this weird season, and all the if you're just over it and you're still bitter by failed resolutions, or whether you're trying again, or whether it's a joke to you. This is the time of year when people think about them. In fact, this is the time of year when some pastors and churches preach about them. In fact, this is the time of year when a lot of pastors are out of the pulpit for a couple of weeks because of holidays. And I'm here today. Past years, I would be maybe gone on a Sunday like today. And this is the time of year when sometimes you just preach that topic because it just seems thematically appropriate if you don't have something else God's put burning in your heart. However, I just don't want us to have New Year's resolutions, and I don't want to talk about them today. But I do want to see us experience something better when it comes to improvement and results. Because there's a reason that New Year's resolutions rarely last. Part of it is the fact that, again, we've had experience in the past where they don't work. Part of it is the problem that when we try to create New Year's resolutions, we find that the results are too slow, and so our commitment wanes over time. Like we tried and it just didn't turn out very well, and we're like, come on! And so we lose our hope. And what I want to imply today to you is there's something better. In fact, I want to say that habits are better than resolutions. So here's what we want to do for the next couple of weeks. I don't want us just to brush over. I don't want you to go home and say, it's a new year, I'm going to do better. And then as if somehow just resolving to do better always works out, because we know something. If it was that much easier to do better, we wouldn't be making resolutions, right? Like if there was things in our life that we regret because they weren't what we hoped they would be, and it was as simple as just saying, I resolve to do better, we wouldn't have to resolve to do better. We would have already done better by now. The reason it's a struggle is because it's hard. And so I don't want you to just to come into a new year saying, let's give it another whirl. And then by the end of January, that's over. Nor do I want to take a sermon to do that. What I want to do is take the month of January to pave out a better way for you and me to have a better tomorrow. And it's much bigger than short-term resolutions. It's something much deeper than that and such more practical than that. And so we're going to take a few weeks to do that. And what I want to do with these few weeks is inspire you to take some steps that will improve your future in whatever areas that you feel you need to see change or growth or better results. At the same time, I want to take the end of each service to remind you that while you strive to be that person, that God loves you as you are. He loves you. He loves you. And that is a whole separate conversation. Don't mix in your religion. Don't mix the challenge to live better, do better, and have better results. Don't mix that with the idea of God's favor or love being dependent on that, that God just loves you. And I want to leave us with that every week, but I want to, in the meantime, challenge us to have better long-term gains and results in our personal lives. And so that's what we're going to do for a little bit here. I mentioned the word habits because habits are better than resolutions. What's a habit? Habit really ultimately is an automated choice. It's a choice that you make to become automated. Or to define it on screen, a habit is a routine of behavior that is regularly repeated or repeated regularly and tends to occur subconsciously. Think about that for a minute. It's a routine of behavior that is repeated regularly and tends to occur subconsciously to the point where eventually you subconsciously do it. You just do it because now it's just part of your routine and you don't even think about it anymore. Because before you subconsciously did it, that's the habit, you repeated it regularly till it got to that point. It became a routine of behavior. So to toss an illustration out in my personal life in our home for your scrutiny, or hopefully not. So for many years of marriage, I have my own habits and routines, but there's some things I never did. I'm very picky about certain things. I've always been picky about which way the toilet paper dispenser, you're supposed to roll the toilet paper dispenser down away from the wall, not against the wall. That's ridiculous because it's touching the wall. The wall's gross. Get it away from the wall. No, get away from the wall. That's what you do. And so, and the toothpaste should be squeezed from the bottom, but I've almost given up on that. And you know, toilet seats should not only be down, but the lid should be down. And I have, and clothes should not be left on the floor. Who leaves, guys, who put your clothes on the floor and put them away? My goodness. Anyhow, just, but one thing I never did for years and years and years in marriage is I never made the bed. That's just something that with our work schedules and early on in our marriage and with Michelle just did that and I never thought about it. As a teenager, I probably did. I think my mom had to threaten me 10 or 12,000 times, but I think I did a few times. But in marriage, I just never did. And so it's just something Michelle made her routine. I never did for years. And in fact, if she didn't for some reason on one day, it just didn't happen because I didn't do it. You know, it's just like, whatever. And so, but a couple years back or so, I decided, you know what, with our life, you know, and things have changed, this needs to be my new job. I mean, I can do more than, you know, take my turns with the laundry and pick my clothes. I can make the bed. I can be my new thing. Now, in my defense for not doing it before, part of the reason why I didn't do it before is because husbands sometimes want to help, but we don't like the fact that you have to do the job. You got to do it a certain way. Like, I'm folding the clothes my way, not your way, or I'll fold them, but don't tell me how to fold them, you know? And so the bed was daunting to me because if it was making the bed that simple, but it's all the extra pillows and fluffy things on top, our bed is like Mount Pilimanjaro up there or something like that, you know? And it's like, I don't even know what to do with that mess. So then I can't recreate this artwork on top of the bed. I have to make the bed, but then I need to take a picture and like memorize it or something. So I decided I'm going to do it. I'm going to learn it. I'm going to figure out how this all goes. And so I started doing it. And it was, at first, it was just a new thing. And how do you build Mount Pilimanjaro? And step back and look at it. Okay, that's okay. And I did it. And I did it the next day. And I had to, that's right, I need to do that. But, you know, I started putting it into my rhythms. Now, I'll tell you something. This morning, if you go to my room right now, our bed is made. And I made it. But don't ask me when I made it today. It just happened somewhere in my routine this morning because it just kind of stacks in when you get up and you take a shower. Hopefully, most people do. Take a shower and comb your hair and do the things to look amazing. You can say amen if you want to. That's okay. But on the process of getting ready, somewhere in that process is I just make the bed. And I can't tell you when I do it. It just happens. It's subconscious at this point. It's just a habit. Because a habit becomes something you subconsciously begins to occur after you repeat it regularly as a routine of behavior. And I want to talk a little bit about something that's better than resolutions, and that is getting, that's even hard because you just can't say, I resolve to have better habits. There's a system. We'll talk about that. But for today, success on this holiday weekend, what I want to say is this. Success is the product of daily habits. Success is the product of daily habits, not once-in-a-lifetime decisions or resolutions or transformations. Everyone wants to be an overnight success, right? That's what we want. We want overnight money. Like my mom used for years was talking about how she was going to get the publisher's clearinghouse money in the mail. Any day, Ed McMahon was going to knock on the door and bring her the publisher's clearinghouse. Never happened, but we always were waiting for it. We all want to get wealthy overnight. We all want to become, a YouTube star famous over just one viral video, and we want to be some business to boom, and just I'd like to just find that fad diet that's just going to rip off all the extra pounds and put me in great shape, and we just want the overnight success. But everyone wants the overnight success, but few want to take the everyday steps. And changes that seem small at first are the secret to compound into remarkable results if you stick with it for years. Now, I'll tell you who understood this. It's throughout Scripture, just almost as an understood thing. In fact, I think it was easier to understand in ancient culture before our modern microwave day and age, to be honest. We're instant gratification day and age. So you can see the thread of this throughout Scripture. But one person who understood this was the Apostle Paul, because he often referred to the importance of this, of what I'm trying to teach today and beyond. He understood it through sporting illustrations. He liked sports, apparently. He understood it through farming illustrations. And he kind of taught this because it was probably, again, in our day and age especially, it's harder to understand what you had to understand about the slow process of any kind of improvement. So Paul would use farming illustrations. In fact, Jesus would use farming illustrations, and the reason they would do that, and if you're watching online or in person, you know this, that the crowd that Jesus was talking to and Paul was talking to was largely an agrarian society. They farmed and they raised livestock. And so they to relate to them on terms they understood was a great way to teach truth. And so when Paul taught farming illustrations, one of the things he often referred to was this natural spiritual law called the law of sowing and reaping. The law of sowing and reaping. And again, the crowd there would understand that as an agrarian culture. They would understand the idea of farming and how you, if you sow seed in the field, you would eventually reap it. And so he taught this throughout. I mean, Corinthians, he talks about it too, about how that works in our generosity. He talks about it in multiple books of his writing. But the idea was this, that especially back in those days, to reap a harvest, you had to first go out to the ground. You had to till the ground. And it was a process without modern equipment. You had to till the ground and till the ground and till the ground some more. And then you had to go out and sow the seed and sow the seed. And you had to sow a lot of seed over a lot of area. And then if the weather didn't cooperate, you had to make sure you had watered the ground. You had to weed the ground. And it's this process of tilling and sowing and watering and weed that would take place over a long period of time with no crops to show for it. Nothing in your kitchen to eat because of it. Until eventually a harvest would come and you'd reap it. And then the payoff was worth it. But, oh, it was a process. It was sometimes with no visible results for long periods of time, just doing the same thing. And the law was this, that when you sow, you will reap. That's a natural, not just a natural, but a spiritual law that Paul taught works in God's economy. That when we sow things in life, and sow things and sow things, and till and sow and water and weed and wait, we reap them. And so he uses this illustration in multiple places for multiple themes. One of them is in the book of Galatians. And in chapter 6 and verse 7, Paul says this. He says, "Do not be deceived. God cannot be mocked." Let me pause there and say, don't deceive yourself. There's no trick around this. God's laws, what God, what God says will be. He won't be mocked. He won't be proven wrong. In other words, if God says this is a spiritual law, you can count on it. As much as the law of gravity and the law of thermodynamics, God's laws will be true. He cannot be mocked. And he refers to which law he's referring to. Once again, he used this one often. A man, he said, a man reaps what he sows. A person reaps what they sow. The idea that what we do will eventually produce an outcome. And he goes on to explain in verse 8, he says this, whoever sows to please their flesh, from the flesh will reap destruction. And of course, we in the church world, you get used to terms like sin. Bottom line, anything that we do that we shouldn't do, whether it's harmful to other people or to ourselves, that we ought not do, the things that we do to please our flesh, that we get caught up in life, those things that we sow to please our flesh, oftentimes will have no immediate consequences. In fact, that's the thing about them, is we can do it sometimes, but you don't reap for a long time. That's the whole thing about the law of sowing and reaping. You reap what you sow, but you don't reap it right away. It's why many people make bad decisions in life. They make bad decisions because when I can make choices in life and there's no immediate consequences for my decisions, I can make some bad behavior and, hey, I don't get busted. I can eat poorly and, hey, I don't look any different. I can look at something I shouldn't look at, and hey, no one caught me. I can neglect a relationship, and hey, it's still hanging in there. Sometimes I can make bad decisions, and there's no consequence. And so we think, what's the big deal? God don't care. No one cares. It's no big deal. But Paul's saying God's laws won't be mocked. What will happen is at some point you reap what you sow. But there's a lot of Wheat, tilling, tilling, sowing, sowing, waiting, waiting, weeding, weeding, watering, watering, waiting, waiting, before that happens. But don't be fooled. Don't be deceived, he said, right? God is not mocked, can't be mocked. You sow to your flesh, from the flesh you reap destruction. Whoever sows to please the Spirit, from the Spirit will reap eternal life, which brings us, this is the negative side or the positive side. I don't want you to miss that. In fact, the reason we turn to Galatians in the first place today, this is so important, the reason we came to this particular story where Paul uses this common illustration he used many times is I wanted you to see the context, not just the negative, but the positive context specifically in what he says in verse 9. In verse 9, Paul explains, let us not become weary in doing good. The positive side. Don't become weary in doing good. We all do. Because at some point, doing good is like the opposite of doing bad. You do something bad, and it's like, hey, there's no consequences. I did something wrong, but hey, nothing happened. It doesn't matter if I cheat on that, if I fudge this over here, because nothing happens. So we make bad decisions because there's no bad consequences right away, but eventually we reap them. And likewise with good, when we do the good things, there's no immediately good consequences. And we're like, man, I did the good thing and nothing paid off. I did something nice for my spouse for a change, and we don't have a perfect marriage all of a sudden magically, so that didn't work. And I ate good today, and so then but I'm suddenly not thin, so that didn't work. And I tried to be honest, and this we just try, and there's no immediate gratification. And Paul says, let's not become weary in doing good, because he said, for at the proper time, there's a time, this is the law of sowing and reaping, in time, we will reap a harvest. Okay? We will reap a harvest, but here's the catch. If we do not give up, what he's saying is this. Whether it's the bad or the good, when you're doing something, you can expect that there's an outcome, but it's delayed. And so you can't become weary in doing the good things just because there's not a payoff, because at the proper time, the harvest is reaped. It always is, but it's only reaped if we do not give up along the way, if we do not become weary in doing good. Such an important verse. You ought to write it down. You ought to memorize it. You ought to put it someplace so you won't forget it. Let's all right now out loud read it together. Ready? Let us not become weary in doing good. For at the proper time, we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Paul is speaking so, this is a great assessment of this spiritual natural law. Let's read it one more time. Ready? Let us not become weary in doing good. For at the proper time, we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Boy, that's big. The idea is that a lot of sowing and watering and tilling and waiting and weeding and waiting some more happens before the reaping. But when the reaping happens, the payoff is worth it. Or if it's bad sowing, the payoff is never worth it. And this is true in almost every area of life. And there's a term people use in describing this in a modern context. They call it measuring what is a lagging measure. A lagging measure is when you measure something to see how it's going, but you're measuring an outcome that's not based upon what you're doing right now, but what's been done beforehand, and those result things you did beforehand have a lagging result, and there's a lagging measure. So for example, so let me put it this way. Your outcomes are a lagging measure of your habits. Your outcomes are a lagging measure. You do things for a while, and eventually there's a way you can measure what you've been doing. Not what you're doing today, but what you've been doing is a lagging measure. You're today reaping not what you're doing today, but what you've been sowing all along. If you've been sowing bad all along, Paul said, you will reap, and that reaping will be a measure of what you've been doing, but not what you're necessarily doing today. And if you do the right thing, if you sow good along the way, that lagging measure will show what you've been doing, not necessarily what you're doing today, but what you've been doing. Your outcomes are a lagging measure of your habits. So practically speaking, let's make this practical. Your net worth is a lagging measure of your financial habits, right? Like, in other words, if you have no money, because, you know, it could be your fault or not, you didn't work, couldn't work, wouldn't work, didn't save, couldn't save. It could be a thousand reasons. But if you're broke today because of how the last year or two or ten have gone, but today you've had a really good day, your net worth probably doesn't reflect how good of a day you've had today with your money. It reflects what you've been doing all this previous time, because your outcomes are a lagging measure of your net worth is a lagging measure of your financial habits. If you had a really bad day, but you might be looking, might look good still if it's been good before today. Okay, your weight is a lagging measure of eating habits. Again, I can't wake up today and say, man, I ate carrots for breakfast and celery for lunch, and man, my clothes are still tight. It's not about what I did today. It's about what I've done the last COVID season. Don't talk about that now, okay? It's this lagging measure that shows up today. My weight is a lagging measure of my eating habits. And same with the other way. I could like eat 10 brownies today and say, hey, the clothes still fit. But probably that's because of what I've done the last 10 months, not what I did today. Okay, your knowledge is a lagging measure of your learning habits. And let's just get real down into the nitty-gritty. Your clutter is a lagging measure of your cleaning habits. That's what happens. That's what Paul was teaching, that not only will you reap what you sow, but it lags. There's a period that fools us. And you see later on the results. Because in the end, you get what you repeat. You get what you repeat. All of us do. Now, because that is true, because what I'm saying today is true, it's a spiritual, natural law of life. Because that's true, you and I should be far more concerned, don't miss this, you should be far more concerned with your current trajectory than with your current results. Because your current results might not be the true measure of where you're at. We should be far more concerned with our current trajectory, because at some point we'll be able to measure, we'll reap that, than we are with our current results. It can be very discouraging today, look at results. Or it can be very overly encouraging, depending on how we've been doing. But where's your trajectory? That's the big issue today. Because time magnifies the margin between success and failure. Right? So it happens. As things diverge, time magnifies the difference between the two. So time will multiply whatever you feed it. So good habits will make time your ally, and bad habits will make time your enemy. Ultimately, it is your commitment to the process that will determine your progress. And that's how things work. Now, I'm trying to set that up. I wanted to give you a practical illustration. And I will in just a moment here. Most of us understand how money works with compound interest. You may understand it through personal experience. Like if you ever had a credit card debt, credit card's a great example of high interest rates. What's depressing about compound interest when it works against you is you could buy something, by the time you eventually make your minimum payments and pay it off, you're like, how much did I actually pay for this thing? What in the world, you know? It's compound interest. It's amazing how bad it adds and it adds and it just is because. And same with people who make money. They invest their money into mutual funds or ETFs or something, and it earns them interest. Sometimes it's the compound interest where you earn money and that is interest, and then you have a bigger amount now, and then that bigger amount earns interest, and it compounds, and it's amazing how the trajectory kind of just arcs up. And in fact, Albert Einstein once said, or allegedly, I wasn't there, he allegedly said that the eighth wonder of the world is compound interest, right? So here's what I'm saying this for. Habits, okay, habits are the compound interest of self-improvement. Habits are the compound interest of self-improvement. It's something that you do and you don't always, it slowly builds and it makes a big difference in time. I want to illustrate this for you in just a moment here. So, for example, if you were to get 1% better every day, that don't seem like a whole lot. And it won't seem like a whole lot for a long while, but it's a huge difference in time, the way that compound growth works. So here's a chart I want to give you that helps illustrate this. On this chart, if you can see this, I think online you're going to get a whole overlay so you can't see anything but that. But if you're this chart, this horizontal line at the bottom moving this way is measured as time. Like as time goes on, you know, time proceeds. That's this line right here. This vertical line over here is your results. You want your results to get better. And what we want to see is that as time goes on, our results get better in some area that we care about, right? Well, here's the thing about 1% better. If this dotted line right here is how you're doing currently and nothing changes, over time you won't get any better. It's just the same thing. You're better than the bottom, but you're just not improving at all. But if you were to either get 1% worse or 1% better every day, the way that compound growth works is not a straight line. In fact, what's interesting is when you start declining 1% a day, the drop looks bigger at first, but over time, because your amount gets so small at the end, it almost looks like it's not even getting worse. It's just horizontal, but it's actually still decreasing. There's just not much left to decrease. You get worse. But if you were to increase and get better 1% a day, the crazy part is that for a while, you would see no real improvement. It would seem like nothing much would change. You sow and you sow and you till and you water and water and weed and weed and wait. You do the same thing and there's that much happening, 1% better every day. But then over time, as that compounds and as that 1% better makes the initial spot a little bit bigger and then that compounds 1% better and it grows, at some point the arc just curves upwards and it skyrockets. And that's the arc of compound growth. And money, for interest, for better or worse for you, that's how it works with anything, is it's an arc that improvement looks very little and minimal, but it grows and it begins to skyrocket at some point, but not right away. Now, if you want to predict where you'll end up in life, all you have to do is follow the tiny curve of gains or tiny losses. Tiny gains or tiny losses. And see how your daily choices will compound 10 or 20 years down the line. If you find yourself struggling to build a good habit or struggling to break a bad habit, sometimes you think, I'm just not capable. I'm incapable of getting any better. But I want to encourage you today that it's not because you've lost your ability to improve. If you can't stop a bad habit when you used to be able to, it's not because you've lost your ability to do better. If you can't start a good habit because you just can't stick with it, it's not because you've lost your ability to. It's oftentimes because we've not yet crossed a threshold of what experts call the plateau of latent potential. Now, to illustrate that for you, I want to show you another chart here. The plateau of latent potential, similar to the last chart, but it's going to hopefully give you something to grab a hold of and take home with you today. So we have the same horizontal line at the bottom. That's time, as time marches on from the right side of the screen to the left on that line. The results are still vertical right here. As we get better in time, we should be getting higher on the vertical. And if you see right here, this very straight improving line right here, this is how we think improvement should come. All of us think that our improvement should come, that when we start improving something, we see improvement right away. It's not as good as it's going to be, but it's obvious improvement, and it's steady, consistent improvement that is a clear, even trajectory all the way from the get-go until it gets better and better and better. This is how we think improvement should look. That's how we all think. But because of what we saw earlier, how compound growth actually works, getting a little bit better every day, here's how it actually goes. You start getting better and you can't even tell. Getting better and better and better, can't even tell. And all of a sudden, there's a little bit of visible improvement, but it's way below what you think should be happening. And a little bit better until the compound growth starts curving your way, and then all of a sudden later, it eventually arcs right up. And this is important for a lot of reasons. Because small changes in our lives, small changes often appear to make no difference until you cross a critical threshold. The most powerful outcomes of any compounding process are always delayed. They're always delayed. And that's why in life we have to be patient. Don't we hate the word patient? Like they say, never pray for patience. You know, because... You know, if you pray for you, like, God, give me patience and please hurry. You know, I hate it. But it's why we have to be patient, because actual improvement doesn't work the way we think it should look like this. But it usually looks like almost nothing, slight improvement until the compounding effect arcs up and we pass the critical threshold. It's like slowly, suddenly. But it wasn't suddenly. It was slowly, slowly, and the results seem sudden. Suddenly, you reap what you've been sowing. Here's the thing, it's interesting. When you finally break through that spot, people will say, oh, it's an overnight success. Look, it's just like, whoa, way beyond the norm. It's an overnight success. But it's not an overnight success. It's a long, steady process of slowly, 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 slowly improving below. And here's why we get discouraged. Don't miss this. We get discouraged on this chart because we expect improvement. We'll get better, but it should be steadily improving from the very get-go. And when it goes like the compound growth arc works, this is how it really goes for most of us. When it goes like this, you see this gap between what we think should happen and what actually happens in compound growth? That gap right there is what we call the valley of disappointment. This is why our New Year's resolutions don't last. This is why our best laid goals stop. Because somewhere, when we're doing what we're supposed to be doing and we're expecting this outcome, but we're getting this outcome for a long time, that gap is our valley of disappointment where we're saying, I'm not seeing the fruit of my work. I'm not seeing the results that I should be seeing. It's not working. I'm not cut out for this. I can't do it. This isn't true. It doesn't pay off. It's all a lie. Whatever we tell ourselves, we lose hope during the valley of disappointment, but before we get to where we think we should get to for a long while. It's called the plateau of latent potential, and it's discouraging. But breakthrough moments are often the result of many previous actions which build up the potential required to unleash a major change. And when it finally happens, people will say, overnight success, but it wasn't. It was a person who persevered during the valley of disappointment. It's a person who did not become weary in doing good, Paul said. Because at the proper time, we reap a harvest if we do not give up in the valley of disappointment. And this is what happens to most of us. It happens to me, it happens to all of us. It's just like, I don't see what, it should be doing better than it's doing. And so we stop. There's an old maxim. I don't know where it came from, but it's so good. I want you to remember it. So I'm gonna put it on the screen here. That people tend to overestimate what can be done in 1 year and to underestimate what can be done in 5 or 10 years. We think there's a lot of things, if I should be able to do this fast. And again, when Paul taught those illustrations to the people back then, they understood in that agrarian culture the idea of steady and waiting and waiting for delayed results. But we live in microwave time. We live in quick fad diets and instant access to things we want to see and just you name it. There's even microwave instructions for Pop-Tarts. Because God forbid we have to put a toaster out, So we just live in that day and age. And what happens is this. Because of that, especially today, we tend to overestimate what can be done in 1 year. We think, well, by now I should have reached this. By now I should look like this. I've been doing the right things. I should look like this by now. Or better than this by now. Or we say, my business should be grown to this point by now. Or if I'm trying to have influence, my influence should have reached to this level by now. Or my finances should have improved this much by now. And we get very discouraged because it doesn't happen. We tend to overestimate what can be done in 1 year. But the crazy part is we tend to underestimate what can be done in 5 or 10 years. Because we understand, we missed the compound growth arc. And so in that valley of disappointment, we say, it didn't work very well these last few months or this last year. It's a waste. I just can't do it. But don't be guilty of falling for the short-term ideas of sowing and reaping. At the proper time. Don't overestimate what can be done in 1 year and underestimate what can be done in 5 or 10 years. That seems so far away, but it's not. Some of us are old enough now to know how fast time goes. You just got to sometimes to believe that today's results may be delayed more than I think they should be. But I will underestimate the outcome if I am steady and don't become weary in doing good. Now, today's message might seem inspiring. It might seem basic, yawn. It might even seem discouraging because it might make you think that's a cool idea and that's a good reminder. I need to remember the compound growth arc. I need to remember the valley of disappointment. I need to remember what Paul was saying about not becoming weary when doing good because it's just going to take a little longer, but the arc is there. I need to remember that chart. I need to remember not to overestimate. This is good, but I just don't think I can do it, man. I just don't think I have what it takes. I'm uncertain in my abilities. And I want to encourage you in the next couple of weeks with that. Before I do, let me say this. Be kind to yourself in this process. One of the reasons we stop any good goals we set is because we're not very kind to ourselves. Say, how are we not kind to ourselves? There's two ways. Way one is we try to take way too big a steps on when we're first starting back out. Like, we've not even walked yet. We're going to, like, run marathons, you know? Be kind to yourself. For example, if you want to become a workout person and exercise and become strong and buff like me, for example. Please don't laugh. That hurts me. No, if you want to become strong and fit, and you've not been to the gym or lifted weights for like 3 years or 3 decades, don't go to the gym for 2.5 hours and say, oh, I'm going to tear every machine up. Because you're going to be dead in 2 days and no one's going to see you again. Okay? You know, be kind to yourself. Just go for a couple minutes. Like, literally, go do one thing. Be kind to yourself. Take small steps. You know, I'm going to run a marathon. If you walked from your couch upstairs without getting winded, maybe just like go around the block, you know? You're going to radically change your whole diet. You've been eating, you know, Christmas cookies all 2 weeks now. You're going to, like, eat only kale today. That's disgusting, by the way. But be kind to yourself. Listen, it's a slow. The whole idea of that 1% improvement is that compound growth happens through small. The key is not big steps. The key is consistent little steps. Be kind to yourself. Give yourself small steps. Don't worry that it's too small. It's embarrassing. No. Small steps consistently done will outdo whatever we expect over the long run. Be kind to yourself. Also, when you fail, and you and I will fail, because I fail, we all fail, be kind to yourself and don't say, I just can't do it. I just can't overcome that bad habit. I just can't do those good things. I'm not cut out for that scene. I just can't do it. No, be kind to yourself. All of us will stumble along the way. But the secret is to say it's okay, because you just get back up and keep taking the small steps all over again. In fact, a thousand years before Paul said the law of sowing and reaping to his audience and told them to hang in there. About 1,000 years earlier, King Solomon, the one a wise king, once wrote in Proverbs 24:16, he said, the godly may trip 7 times, but they will get up again. But one disaster is enough to overthrow the wicked. In other words, what he's saying is this. It takes one thing going wrong for some people to say, I'm done. I tried and I couldn't cut it. I tried to be a better person. I couldn't be. I tried to stop that bad behavior, but that's who I am. I try to do the good thing, but I just don't fit into that scene. I can't do it. One disaster, I'm done, I'm over, I'm quit, I throw in the towel, I'm not even trying anymore. But good people, people who follow the heart of God in this thing, they can trip over and over again, but they keep getting back up. They say, oh man, I had a bad day, but you know what? It's a series of small steps, and so the seeker's not to throw in the towel and say, I can't, it's to say, whoops, get back up and take the next small step, the next baby step. Bob taught us that, didn't he? The next baby step, and keep going, and keep going. And when you stumble, get back up, take the next step, and the next step. That's how things happen over the compound growth arc. But it takes people who don't get discouraged and get back up and are kind to themselves and are patient with the process. Now, you say, okay, so I should set goals. Well, yes, goals are good initially. I want to encourage you to do some of that today. But goals are good initially, but goals don't get you there. In fact, goals are not the secret sauce. You got to have goals at the beginning to know where you're trying to go, but goals are just the beginning. The good news is you don't even need them other than initially. There's something way better than goals. We're going to tell you about it next week. We're going to discuss for a couple weeks some practical help in a series that we're calling Chain Reactions. Chain Reactions, Setting a Better Future in Motion. We're going to look at some scripture that teaches these principles, and we're going to see how that God's laws and God's teachings apply to our lives in practical ways, and there's something much better than a resolution or a goal to have. But you got to. But today, we didn't get practical at all. In fact, I feel bad that we didn't get more practical. All we did today was try to inspire you to believe in the slow growth of compound growth, the slow arc, and to not quit during the valley of disappointment, to not become weary in doing good because the results aren't there yet, to believe that in the proper time you'll reap a harvest if we do not give up, and to see it through, because that's how we are. Don't overestimate what could be done in a year. Don't underestimate what could be done in 5 or 10 years. Take the journey. We'll talk about that for a few weeks in practical terms and give you some practical tools that are better than just trying, because trying stinks by itself. But for today, here's what I want you to do. For today, start making the choices that invest into your desired outcome. And I don't even like how I worded that. I just had to put something up here. Let me explain what I mean by this. I want you to go home today, this week, tomorrow morning at the latest, and I want you to pick one or two areas that you'd like to see change, different results, different outcomes. Don't pick 20. We can all pick 20. That's just daunting. That makes you quit. Don't do 20. Pick one or two. Maybe something you want to stop doing that you just can't get over. Maybe something you want to get better at doing, but you just can't find rhythm. Pick one or two areas today or tomorrow, or even before we finish the service today. Write those two things, or one thing or two things down. Write it down. Here's what I want you to do this week until next Sunday. This week, I want you to just pray about it. Every day, or maybe multiple times a day, go to God and say, God, there's this thing I want to stop, but I can't seem to get past it, or there's something I want to do better, but I just can't seem to get traction. That thing or those two things, pray about them every single day. Take them to God and say, God, I want to see improvement in my life, in my relationships. I want to do this better for my relationship's sake. I want to do this better for my financial sake, for my health's sake, for my business sake, whatever it may be, financial sake. Lord, I want to do better, but I don't believe there's going to be instant results. There's going to be a compound growth arc that I got to be patient while I till and till and sow and wade and weed and water and wait some more. But I believe it. And I'm not going to get weary in doing good. I'm going to believe this, and I'm going to not give up, like Paul said. But God, just starting out today before we go back to church and get more ideas of systems in place to do these things, God, today I just want to say, here's my thing, or here are my two things. I need your help, because we need God's help to get things done. So would you take this week, write those things down, and just pray about them for the next few days. Come back together, and we'll go further together. Because I want to be on a journey, and so do you, I hope. Remember the wonder to compound growth. And by belief, by the grace of God, bright days and outcomes and great harvest of reaping can be yours and mine down the road, if we do not give up and become weary in doing good.